Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock on a Friday here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
How was your vacation?
It was great. What were you doing while I was away?
I was sitting here trying to shovel out to your house so you could get in, but then we got there and you weren't there.
I understand. You didn't get to drive a plow.
I do not have a Class 3 license. I once asked about that. Not that you want me behind one, incidentally. But you have to have a special license. These guys are, you know, well-trained.
I would think so. I don't think it's I've watched them do it. I don't think it is that easy. You need some experience. You need some training to do this. You just don't get – it's not like getting in a car and driving away.
Or getting stuck in the middle of the road, which keeps the other guy from doing his job.
Yeah, exactly so. Okay, well, we dodged the bullet this time around.
Well, we had a snowstorm. Not the biggest, not the smallest. The only complaints we got, it was fascinating. A couple of people who had complained we hadn't plowed, this time were complaining, oh, you kept me up all night long.
I saw that, and I made note of it that Wednesday morning.
You know, Tuesday, or you didn't pick up the garbage. Well, we were plowing. Which do you want, kind of thing. But this time, things were fine. You know, the workforce, I think it's fair to say the sanitation department men have their chests out, and women, and saying, you know, we did a good job, and they deserve some credit for that. Even this snowstorm where everything seemed to work, you know, we're looking at it and seeing whether we can learn something and do it better the next time.
Connecticut, Long Island got whacked much harder than we did
much
here.
A lot of it has to do with how much snow. It also has to do with how quickly the snow comes down. If the concentration is in 1 hour, if you had 5 inches in 1 hour, that's a lot, and it's a lot to deal with. It's also the winds, because they plow, and you know, if you drive along Belt Parkway, for example, a lot of winds right on the water. They can plow, and 2 minutes later, it looks like they did.
Yeah.
It's covered up. So that has something to do with it. How cold it is, because the salt won't work if it's very cold, that helps. One of the biggest determinants is when the storm comes in. We asked people not to drive, if at all possible, and we asked them not to call 911 for non-emergencies. In the first storm, a lot of people got stuck, and we overloaded. We handled the volume, but it was an enormous number of calls for 911 that should not have gone to 911. This time, not at all. Well, okay, that's true, but the storm was here from midnight to 4 or 5 in the morning, so people weren't driving. And they were sleeping, and they weren't calling 911. They were sleeping, so that makes a difference.
In one of the 15 initiatives that your evaluation team put together and was released, I think, on Monday, it was to look at a better way to communicate with emergency situations, and I translated that to, why don't we already have 911 and 311?
And we have 911 and 311, but they are. You call us if we want to tell you about a situation.
Oh, okay. That's what this was
about. One of the things it was about. We have this Notify New York. You can sign up. I signed up. You can sign up for an area. And so we will automatically text you or email you or a variety of different social mediums or ways to do it to tell you about things that you have said in advance that you are interested in. The real question is, how do you get to most of the people who don't sign up and don't know there's a problem, so they're not calling in to ask or to report it, but you have information that could be life-saving for them? So,
how about the emergency notification system, which we test, ad nauseum on the radio and television? You have the capability.
Yeah, we do have a capability. I remember when we first came in office, there was an issue with some of the radio stations. We don't want you preempting. We'll decide whether it goes out and that sort of thing. If there was a real emergency, that system is there. But a real emergency, a snowstorm.
The definition of a real emergency is a call.
You know, in Connecticut you would have wanted it, and you know, parts of New Jersey you wouldn't, and in different boroughs or different parts of.
I hadn't thought about that, because if you broadcast it over WOR, it goes up and down the East Coast.
The whole world listens to WOR, particularly your show in the morning. I hear
Fridays
that
Fridays between 8 and 9.
That's probably the most.
Speaking of technology, I know in the last storm, which I get the impression was different from the Christmas storm, GPS on a lot of the plows and tracking what streets had been plowed and not.
Years ago, we put in a GPS system called an automatic vehicle locating system on a bunch of trucks that we use for sanding and spreading salt. It reports automatically what street, where, how fast they're going, how much salt's coming out of the back, all these kinds of things. It is very expensive. It is useful, but it's like $6,000 a truck. We have 1,700 plow trucks out there. We can't afford that. Today, the technology has changed dramatically. So what we did, we experimented with, and so far the experiment has gone very, very well. Giving a small handheld phone that has GPS in it to the driver or one of the men or women on the truck, it reports where they are, and it does it, let's say, every minute, so you can see whether they've gone down a particular street. Doesn't tell you how much sand's coming out, doesn't tell you how much snow is on the ground, that sort of stuff. But it has some another advantage, and that is push-to-talk, where they can talk directly to the garage or to the other trucks in the neighborhood. And it turns out the way they plow streets is, in a lot of cases, they use three trucks and they coordinate how they go. One guy goes down left, one guy goes down right, one guy goes down, whatever it is. They right now don't have any ways of really, other than they stop, get out of their trucks and say, hey, Joe, you go here, Sam, you go here, Sally, you do that. This way they can just talk on it. And we had a truck stuck or broke down, and the guy just hit the button, the garage sent somebody out right away. So it looks like it works. Scaling it up to 1,700 or 2,000 trucks requires some software, because otherwise your map looks like just solid truck. And you have to be able to, you can't look at 2,000 data points at any one time. You want the software to tell you when something's going wrong, when the truck is stopped, when the truck is trying to communicate, when the truck has gone off a route that you thought it was going to be on, and that sort of thing. And technology lets you do that. It's like security cameras. If you have security cameras every place, and John Gambling has the job of watching them, if there's nothing going on, John Gambling falls asleep. And there's so many cameras, you can't watch them all anyways. So what you do is you have smart software. If there's no motion whatsoever, that picture doesn't come up.
And you're using this now with the trucks.
That's the next step. But we will, over the course of this year, have, and we've already ordered the phones, these small phones. They can't be used for regular calls because that'd just be a nightmare. And you know, who calls whom and managing it and paying for it and that sort of thing. It's this push-to-talk technology. And in both cases, we actually had it for a storm that didn't come. There was one in the middle that you missed also. But we were able to at least try the technology. And then this time we used it on the last storm. And it's it'll give us a lot more control and communication, and not just for plowing, picking up refuse and picking
some folks up in Connecticut are complaining, the complaints in New York over this last storm. But my point here is that they were talking about the same depth of snow, almost 30 inches of snow in the New Haven area and some of the others. And the difficult part is you have to decide what you build your fleet for. Do you build your fleet for the worst storm possible or the average
storm? You cannot
storm.
Afford to build it for the worst storm possible. And what's more, in places where they get 30 inches, and when I grew up in Boston, I mean, I asked my mother the other day, and she said, yes, that when I'd go out as a young kid, the snow would be higher than me, and, you know, you'd have 2 or 3 feet of snow in a normal storm. And I remember as a kid, I think I got $5, I'm not sure, for shoveling in the neighborhood, and you'd contract with these people. And the deal was when the plow came by and plowed you in, even if it came by 5 times, you had to go back.
And you didn't get paid again.
No, that was part of the deal. You can't build for the worst case. And where there are these big storms, they don't plow all the streets, and they certainly don't plow all the streets right away. The standard here in New York is, and it should be, is much more demanding. That's what we should do. That's what our citizens demand. But it's not what other people get, because they just can't afford it. And we are going to have to find a ways to pay for it. I've got one of the things I'm working on is our State of the City speech, which we give next week, talking about all the things that are going right, all the things that we are going to do in the future if we can afford it, all the things that could go wrong, and how we're going to pull it all together and keep this city moving forward. because, you know, the economic numbers still continue to be good. People are moving here and business is better here. And in spite of the snowstorm on Christmas weekend, you know, the city is doing well. And they're all listening to you.
Any advancement in the investigation on whether or not there was a slowdown Christmas weekend?
I don't know what each of the district attorneys are doing. My personal opinion, from what I've heard and seen, I think most of the people, now keep in mind, the sanitation department put 6,000 people out there. I think most of them worked very hard. They were very frustrated by 600 buses stuck, 200 ambulances stuck, thousands of cars stuck, the snow coming down very hard and winds, and they worked very hard. I cannot tell you, and I'm sure it's not true, that every single person did everything they should do. But, you know, I think it was Ed Koch, he said one time, you know, we have our police department, for example, same number of people as same number of employees in the police department as in most middle-sized cities. Is everybody in a middle-sized city honest? No, but our cops are very honest in the context of the vast, vast, vast majority. And I think that's true for the people that worked in the storm. And John Daugherty got criticized for, he was asked, you know, what's the rating? And I said, when I was asked, I said, unacceptable. John said, A+. John's job is to get the people that he supervises to feel that people appreciate what they do and that you want them to have the spirit to go that extra mile. And that's true of all city employees. You know, you have to be realistic, but it's a question of what you're trying to measure. I think the answer to your question is there was probably, as far as I know, no concerted effort, and very few people didn't do their all. I'm sure there was some.
Okay. Hang on, Mr. Mayor. Lots more. And speaking of hanging on, we'd like to, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, to hang on here. Get in line, 800-321-0710. We'll open up the phones, your questions, before we finish up at the end. 800-321-0710. Coming right back, this portion of the program brought to you by Billy Elliott.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Again, let me remind you, if you've got a question, 800-321-0710. We've got the lines, and we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the Friday John Gambling Show, 25 minutes after 8 o'clock. Of course, the tragedy of Arizona, horrific in and of itself. That's a way too simplistic way of putting it. But it brings, of course, again, the availability of that Glock with a 30-bullet clip in it that this crazy person used.
Well, that's true, but keep in mind, we, for example, allow our police officers to buy... we give them the first gun for free, and then they have to buy their own after that. But they must buy them from three different manufacturers that we've approved. One is Glock.
So it's not just a Glock.
No. One is Glock, one is Smith & Wesson, and the other is Sig Sauer. And I don't know, it's, you know, split somewhat evenly between the three of them. All three have these high-capacity magazines. And last year we bought something like 1,300 new guns. Well, divide it, and it's 450 a piece or some number like that.
There's been a call to boycott Glock.
If we would, the trouble is, if we boycott one, you probably have to boycott all of them, and then go back to the days when the crooks had better guns than the cops. We don't want our cops outgunned. Back in the days when they were outgunned, there were 2,000 murders. Today, there's not 2,000 murders. There's a quarter of that, and there's a lot of things that went into the lower crime, but arming the cops was part of it, and going backwards on arming them is probably not. I mean, I agree that we should find ways to stop them from selling these high-capacity magazines, because the only reason is to go kill a lot of people. You don't need it for a deer or a moose. You just don't. On the other hand...
But that begs the question of the availability of the gun to somebody like this, Jared Loeffner.
We need a law to stop you from selling it. I mean, New York City doesn't have enough buying power to force. As a matter of fact, you saw what happened to Glock sales. They skyrocketed.
How sick is that?
It is, but if we boycotted, it would probably have the same effect. You know, that you don't want. So the intent of people who want to stop us, want to stop them from selling, I couldn't agree more with them. We have this coalition of 500 mayors around the country, but we need the federal government to stand up and, you know, just enforce a few laws. And the assault weapon ban that they took off, you just don't need to sell these things. It's nothing to do with the Second Amendment. It's nothing to do with hunting. It's just, I don't know how many tragedies like this you have to have before people are going to say enough. But the Congress and, you know, all of Washington, they don't seem to. The only thing I haven't heard really from Washington is, let's enforce the laws. And if you think about it,
you're right. There's been a lot of noise, but there hasn't been that noise.
Fort Hood, remember that?
Sure.
Blew everybody away. The FBI had the information, didn't give it to the Army. This time, the Army knew this guy was a drug addict because they banned him from life, as does the NYPD. Didn't tell the FBI. Now, you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but nobody's connecting the dots. I kept talking about that after 9/11. We learned our lesson. We're never going to do it again. And they talk about this one-year ban on buying a gun if you are a drug addict. U.S. Army and the NYPD, it's a lifetime ban. And I don't know, 1 year, I mean, you can have court cases go on for a lot longer than that. This is just... we've got to do something about...
And the reaction to this is always interesting to watch, and out of Washington has come, should we put plexiglass in the between the gallery and the house? My buddy Peter King, let's put a 1,000-foot barrier where you're not allowed to carry a gun if there's a federal lawmaker involved in that. I mean, all of that is just silly.
Pete, and I understand where Pete's coming from, and I think that his ideas are good, except that, I don't know if it's Gail Collins, somebody wrote, you know, it's just going to, you're protecting the people that make the laws, and then they don't have to worry about it, but the rest of us do. That doesn't make any sense. They're the ones that should be running the most risks, because they're the ones making the laws. The public's the one that should be protected, and this is going in the other direction.
All right. I'll tell you what we'll do. We're going to take another break right here. We've made it to 8:30. Joe Bartlett standing by with more news. We will get right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you, 800-321-0710. Joe.
Give John a call now. 800-321-0710. News Talk Radio, 710 WOR.
23 before 9 o'clock. You better get in line if you got a question. 800-321-0710, as Bill Rock just said. Mr. Mayor, one more snow question. Wednesday, decision made by the school's chancellor, Kathleen Black, keep school open. 50, what do I have here? I got it written down. Hold on a second. How many? 48% of the students showed up. How many teachers? Do you know how many teachers?
About 75% of the teachers.
Okay.
This is normally 10% that, you know, don't anyway. So, the issue here is just two things. Number one, our job is not to close schools, it's to keep them open. We want the kids to get more class time because this is their future, getting an education. Number two, you have an awful lot of kids, particularly in the elementary schools, where if schools are closed, their parents have to make some very difficult choices. Leave the kid home unsupervised, an elementary school kid, not a good idea. Or miss a day's pay that you really need to take care of your child. In this case, it's up to the parent. The schools are open. We will take care of the child. We'll educate the child. If you don't want to send them, you don't have to. But if it's missing a day's pay that you can't afford to do, leaving your child unsupervised, you don't have to make those choices. So we always try very hard to keep schools open. And I think we only closed them 6 times since the late 70s, something like that. Very, very few snow days. We've had 3, I think, in the last 8 years, 9 years, something like that. It turned out that the school custodians managed to shovel out, you know, around each school, and people got to class. There was one school I saw complain that Kathy was supposed to visit them and didn't come. Yeah, because I had an event to talk to the press, and I thought it was important that she be there to answer questions, which she did, about school closing. So sorry, but we will reschedule
when the boss says we're having a meeting.
You know, a lot of things. One, you do not have to criticize Kathy Black for a work ethic. This woman works as hard as anybody I've ever seen.
The feds.
But it was the right decision, it sounds.
The feds are suing the city over overspending in Medicaid $60 million. What's the deal there?
You know, we don't receive 1 cent from this practice. It's done by service organizations, community-based organizations. They're paid directly by the state. We don't receive any payment for it. We want to make sure our elderly residents aren't forced into nursing homes and give them an option of personal care. But the state has oversight over this program, and except for working on a response to this federal audit, their entire focus has been on complying with the wishes of the recipients, and their advocates and families keep recipients out of nursing homes. So, I don't know.
What happens if the judgment goes against the city? Do you come up with the cash, the differential?
If you get ordered by a judge to pay a fine, you pay a fine. This is really, I don't quite know why the story was reported about the city. Yes, it takes place here, but it's a state program that the city doesn't have any, doesn't pay for or doesn't get any benefit from in terms of savings. We help administer it, but so that was that.
The Zadroga bill has been signed, and I know everybody's happy about that. And it turns out that Ken Feinberg, who I have had the opportunity to interview a number of times and have a professional relationship with, he's a smart guy. I mean,
As good as they come, and every time he's done something, people walk away shaking their heads saying, I thought it was impossible, and Feinberg did it to keep almost every, you can't be 100%, but almost everybody happy, be fair, and be reasonable. And
Common sense.
Yeah, Schumer talked about Feinberg and talked about his unique experience and expertise and stellar reputation for fairness and efficiency, and I couldn't agree more with Chuck. This really would be the best choice to administer the fund, and I hope that the government puts him in charge.
He's going to do it for nothing.
Ken does a lot of this stuff for nothing, yeah. People respect. One of the important things in a job like this is that people respect you, because they're never going to get everything they want, but they want to believe that they were treated fairly and given a good hearing. People believe that when Ken Feinberg does that, they will do it. And Chuck has been out there beating the drums for him, and I'm going to help as well.
All right. The cruise industry was showing off their best last night in New York City.
Three big ships.
It must have been a heck of a party out there on the boat. But the cruise industry has really come back, because it almost disappeared years ago.
And if you remember, we came in and we said we're going to get – we did is we signed deals with cruise companies that will guarantee they'll come here X number of times per year or per month, whatever it is. Based on that and the fees they pay to dock, we then went out and borrowed money and invested the money to renovate the piers. Now, the trouble, of course, is on the west side, the Hudson River piers are nowhere near big enough
to
take
new ships.
The big new ships. So we built one over in Red Hook.
I've seen it. I've seen the Queen Mary.
People said this is ridiculous. Nobody wants to go to Brooklyn. Well, number one, Brooklyn's one of the hottest boroughs. Marty Markowitz brags about it. He's right to brag. New hotels, new restaurants, stores. It's exciting. People around the world know about Brooklyn and want to go, and there's communities, ethnic communities they want to visit. But also, you're very close to coming into Manhattan, and it's just been phenomenally successful. There's an estimate that the passengers and crews of the ships that landed there spent something like $145 million in 2010, 50% more than they spent in 2009, and the number of ships went up to 240 visits, and next year we expect something like 290, and 79% of the passengers come from outside New York City, so they do come. They spend a lot of money. It is a growing part of our tourism business. And last year we had 48.7 million tourists, which is just something like $31 billion spent in the five boroughs. When people come here, in some cities, cruise destinations, people go, they barely get off the boat. They go in, they buy a tchotchke or a T-shirt that says, I was a visitor, such and such. And in fact, a lot of these places won't let ships in unless they give them The cruise line gives a voucher to the people where they can spend it in the city or lose it, because otherwise they just don't spend any money where they visit. That's not true in New York. They come here, then they go into the city and they go to restaurants and shows and stores, and so it's a very important part of
it. I have to give you an anecdote along those lines. This Tuesday I came back from Florida, and my wife and I, Wendy and I, were taking the air train back to the Long Island Railroad to go home.
Right.
And there on the air train was this very young couple who, obviously, this was at Kennedy, and they were lost, and I said, "Can I help you?
Yeah.
Where do you want to go?"
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she said, "Well, we want to go into New York City. We've never been here before."
Right.
And so I told them how to do it on the railroad and come back. She goes, "Yeah, where will this drop me off?" I said, "It'll drop you off at 34th Street, right smack dab in the middle of the city." She goes, "Is there a place to eat?" I said, "You have no idea."
I remember when one of the national parties.
But the point is that you know they come just to come to New York because they've never been there before.
There is no question. This is if you think about tourism, it's our replacement for industry. It's an industry, but it's a replacement for the old line industries that used to be here. Manufacturing. Things have changed. We still have 500,000 people that work in manufacturing, but it's a different kind of manufacturing of what you had back in the old heydays. Now all that's moved elsewhere, and we've replaced it. And we are the hot place. Partially, it's because of all the cultural things. People make fun of these little crazy cultural things. They get written up around the world, and then people come here because of it. We're the hot place, and we just got to keep doing this. With this NYC and company George Fertitta runs, and Emily Rafferty, who's the president of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, is, I think, the chairman of it. And we have something like they've created 18 offices around the world that advertise and go out and give speeches and convince people. We swap advertising with other cities so that, and it's all funded with private money. Donations, and it's to bring tourists here, to bring businesses here. That's what we need. The hotel business is something like we added, I don't know, 7,000 odd hospitality jobs last year. We had 7,000 new hotel rooms added this past year, and hotel occupancy went up. 7,000 is more than almost every other city in the world has. Not the biggest ones, but most of them cities. They don't have a total of 7,000. They don't come remotely close. That's just our additions this year, and they're full. And rates are starting to go up. So this is the future of the city. And if we're going to create jobs, this is what we've got to do. What are the things that gives us an advantage? And you mentioned the couple asking, is there a place they could eat? When I remember years ago, six years ago, one of the site selection committees for either the Democrats or Republican Party was talking to New York, came here to talk about whether they'd bring their convention here. I forget which one and when. And somebody said to me, well, you know, we have 5,000 delegates. If they went out to restaurants, could the restaurants handle them? I said, we have 20,000 restaurants. We could give each their own restaurant and we wouldn't notice.
Exactly. But again, when you're new and you've never been here and you don't know what to expect, it was a wonderful event. I put a smile on my face.
We set a goal of 50 million visitors by 2015. We moved that up to 50 million visitors by 2012. We may make that this year if we're lucky.
All right. The Jets are going to New England this
weekend. No, the Jets are going to the Super Bowl. You heard it from me.
This is it. This is the Bloomberg prediction.
The Bloomberg prediction, yeah. I mean, I don't want to jinx them, but it was interesting. There's an article in the paper about Rex Ryan, and, you know, he's all this stuff. He's out there cheering up, and we're going to beat this guy. This is my target, whatever. That builds the brand, and it builds the Jets as an economic value to the city. All this stuff is good. Sports, even if you don't like it, your livelihood depends on it. Your tax rates depend on it. We want New York teams to be successful. And this year, in all fairness to the Dolans and Madison Square Garden, I went to a Rangers game the other night. It was exciting. They lost 2-1, but they played the Montreal. The Knicks are winning. You know, are they going to win the NBA title? I don't know, but they're going in the right direction for the first time in a long time. Both of these teams are exciting, and you go, people are enthusiastic, and they're sold out. The Nets, when they move to Brooklyn, I think will be a phenomenal success. Brooklyn is, you know, Brooklyn was its own city, which, no, Marty, it's not going to be. If Brooklyn was its own
Marty
city.
Marty does want to see them once in a while.
It'd be the second biggest city in the country, and they're sports crazy. They love it. So, you know, the Atlantic Yards will be a, and the Nets will be a big success.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we have some folks on the line here that have some questions for you. Let me take a minute to make some money for the company, and we'll be right back to those 11 before 9 o'clock.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We are back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and we are back with you, Mr. Mayor. Going to go right to the telephones. Line number 6 happens to be Frank. Frank, you've got the mayor. Go.
Mr. Mayor, I don't know whether you saw the op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by Joel Klein. He drew a parallel between the city's pension system for teachers and Bernie Madoff and his Ponzi scheme, where he guaranteed, where the in the city they guarantee 8%.
Is there a question?
Yeah, the question is, Mr. Mayor, you're a businessman. How could you make this deal?
Well, the pension system, keep in mind, is fundamentally put in by the state legislatures, and there is a an auditor, I think what you'd call him, who sets the assumed rate. And the reason the assumed rate is important, because you have to decide how much to put in this year to take care of benefits from somebody who's going to retire, let's say, in 20 years. And so the higher the rate, the less you have to put in. On the other hand, the higher the rate, the less likely it is that the investments over the next 20 years will earn that. And Joel's talking about the pension system. It's not just the New York City teachers' pension system. It's all the municipal pension systems, and it's not just New York. Across the country, and you see every state and every city dealing with this issue, they have had unreasonably high expectations. There was a great chart in the New York Times Sunday business section a few weeks ago. If you look at it, they pick random times you go in and come out of the market. And in the stock market, you're on average going to make 2 or 3%. Some number like that, maybe it's 3 or 4%. But nowhere near the 8% that there's an assumption. Now, the assumption is being lowered in New York for our pension funds, which means we're going to have to put a lot more money into the system. If they brought it all the way down to 4%, there would be an enormous amount of money. Just going from 8 to maybe 7.5 is an enormous cost. Our pension system systems, the municipal pension systems in New York City, were $1.5 billion a year when I came in. Next year, they're going to be 8.5. This year, they're 7.5. And it's because of poor performance in their investments, although a lot of it's just the markets, whatever it is. Part of it is because the benefits keep getting raised and we have these presumption bills so people qualify better. You can argue whether you should or shouldn't, but that's a reason. And the third one is that they're going to reduce the assumption. And so we're going to have to put more money in to do this. But the most of these things, not all, but most of them are state benefits the state legislature gives to municipal workers where the city has to pay for it. And we have screamed again and again and again, the city should be able to negotiate pensions the same way it negotiates salaries with its own workers, and the state shouldn't be a part of it in terms of giving benefits that we've already said no to or don't have a right to have any say, but making us pay for it.
All right, Frank, there you go. Mike is up next. Mike, your question for Mayor Bloomberg. Hello, Mike. Mike? Okay, Mike seems I'm going to put him on hold in case he comes back again. Let's go to Harry. Harry, you're with John and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Hi, Harry.
Hi, Mayor. How are you?
Good.
Quick rhetorical question and a comment. Do you think, Mayor, that the city council will investigate the success of the tourism industry under your initiatives?
Probably not. Okay. But they will be a benefit because everybody's taxes are lower than they would otherwise be thanks to all this business coming into the city.
Here's my comment, Mayor. Why is it free for cars to park on the streets of New York City? You talked about snow removal and the expense of that and how it might be improved by technology. I realize this is for public safety and all that, but a major beneficiary of those folks, including me, I live in Queens, I have a car, I park on the street, who park for free. Shouldn't the city consider a permit or some kind of fee for people who park in order to...
Harry's not going
to
make any friends in his neighborhood.
Harry's probably not going to make any friends. Number one, Harry, you know, all of this money is fungible, so finding ways for us to get fees or fines or taxes that lets us provide the services people want is always controversial, and you can have lots of different opinions. One of the things we've done in New York City is we reduced the number of parking placards where you put it in your windshield and you can park for nothing, sometimes in front of a fire hydrant, sometimes at the corner and not get a ticket. And we had something like 140,000 of these placards, and former Deputy Mayor Ed Schuyler really worked on this hard, and we cut it in half. We cut it down to something like 70-odd thousand. Most of the placard reduction was in police and Department of Ed. That's where the biggest number of these placards were. Now, those people that lost them aren't happy. Those that still have them think they deserve them. People that don't have them think nobody deserves them. And then you go out into the less dense parts of the city, and there are no parking meters, and there are no fees. Periodically, Harry, people have suggested charging. Then there's the question, well, if you come from New Jersey and you're visiting old Aunt Sally, you know, do you get a ticket for it? And there's no good answer. I suppose another way is to look at it is built into your property taxes is the right to park and not get charged for your car, but you pay for it anyways. Now, you can say, well, wait a second, if I don't have a car, why do I? But it's fundamentally all one big thing. We want services in the city so that we're safe and our kids get educated and we have a future. And then we've got to pay for it. And that's where the argument comes. And incidentally, your comments about the city council, I will say that Chris Quinn has been a real partner with us in helping a lot of the things that increase tourism. The city council has been part of and helpful.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it. No major snow, at least in the forecast, I think, for the week
none
coming
whatsoever.
Up.
So it's going nice. To be nice. It's going to be nice. The next storm that comes in is in the middle of the weekend. It's supposed to be rain.
You better wear your green on Sunday, 4:30.
I will do that.
Jets, Patriots.
I will be watching. I'm not going to the game, but I'll be watching.
Go big green. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We'll see you next week. All right, that's going to do it. Don't forget, Monday, new time. We start at 6 o'clock, 6 to 10 here at WOR. Have a great weekend, everybody.